and the wild thing about life in this age is that velocity might be the most remarkable thing about living in 2013. Things are happening so fast. And, you know, we did see the breakup of the Soviet Union in our lifetime happen very quick. We never did get that peace dividend they talked about. The opposite happened. But the fact is that by talking about this and by establishing this regional identity and by exhorting people to have a deep connection to place, and we, you know, with many people, we don't have to do that. They're going to REI. They're getting their backpacking gear. They're going into the Olympics. They're getting lost and being rescued by helicopters. You know, they're having the, you know, there's a segment that already has that. Their religion is going to Glacier Meadows at Mount Olympus and seeing Blue Glacier. That is their religion.
Now, Blue Glacier. Wow. You see, here's the conundrum. You say, well, we want to create a bioregional culture. Well, in a sense, you've already got the foundation, because there are many people here, whether they call themselves Cascadian, whether they know anything about that at all, who are people of the place and who love the place and identify with the place. And at least around here, I know it's true in Seattle and a lot of other places, but around here, it just astonishes me the fierce devotion and intensity and fight for the place they love. My God, you don't have to create it. It's
there.
It's a bit much sometimes. Yeah. And I applaud it, and I live in the heart of that. But still, I'm astonished sometimes that this fierce identification of it. But when they come to articulate that, it's like Bella said with community. There is no discourse or language that allows us to begin to develop that love and the culture of place. Environmentalism is one example of that. Various forms of service to the place and so on. But there is not a framework. And that framework, and you say, well, why don't we have that framework? Well, that's what we're trying to help articulate some of the grounds of it. I used to come in very strongly. I can give you a thing called Ecology and Community, the Bioregional Vision, which is, it really has a strong critical, that particular essay 15 years ago has a strong critical component, because we were still fighting the Reagan era rape of the forest and so on, the assault on the environment. And so bioregionalism really comes out of both the environmentalism and the social reform, social justice, economic justice, so on, kind of thing. It has the root in both of them. What I've learned in the meantime is this whole undertaking adventure. See, I think Cascadia is first an adventure. It's into the openness of being here and learning to dwell here. And that's one been the fabulous thing. It just keeps unfolding. Not a movement, but the understanding of Cascadia as this dynamic verge of a place that unfolds and unfolds on all these levels. So what I've learned is that we're all captive of a certain epistemology and metaphysics that comes from, at first I thought it was American. Then I thought, well, maybe it's the Protestant ethic, it's the Puritan. Oh, maybe it's the Enlightenment. You know, and you do your history and you go back. And I learned a lot of history. I taught history for cultural traditions for quite a few years at CIU. And that was quite an adventure in the kind of the retrospective thing. How did we get here? But more and more, and it's really been conversations with a friend who's a philosopher, that I've come to reject everything he believes and stands for. Because I see that it's an intractable addiction to a logic and a set of a language that goes with that logic, and a set of categories and a set of transcendental idealities that really came from the Greeks. And the Greek philosophy was a fabulous achievement on many, many levels, taught us to think, but it's not really American or really Protestant or really Enlightenment or really even Western culture that is at the root of it. The secret code we've all learned, and it is the means of entry to any profession or organization. It's really what runs the world is this secret code that we inherited from the Greeks of how to think. And also our ethics are part of that. So I no longer believe in political definitions of our dilemmas. I have now a radar for when people are captive and they don't know it, and that the secret code is speaking through them. And I can identify this secret code like that. And the great struggle for the last 10 years or so on the side, related but separate to Cascading, is unlearning that secret controlling code of the West.
And the code is going back to the separation of myth and logos.
Man
is estranged from that which he is most familiar, Heraclitus,
absolutely. And the logo, okay, we're into philosophy, we're into metaphysics.
We don't have to go too far down this.
No, but let me just loop it rather than go forward into it. If you want a philosophical underpinning, and people need to get much deeper than, oh, let's become independent or let's have a flag or something, it's just a bunch of... I don't listen to that anymore because it's so naive and uncritical that when you're engaged in a fight with empire or colonialism or capitalism, all these negations, you become captive of the very same thing that you oppose, because underlying that is a framework that holds you both. And so this naivete...
Einstein said sometimes two sides disagree because they're both wrong. Right?
It's the presupposition. It's the whole framework. So if you want the bioregional and Cascadia as the embodiment of that, if you want its revolutionary import, it has to do with unlearning that secret code, which estranges us or leads to that dissevrement, that dismembering of the world and dismembering of relationality. There was a philosophical breakthrough in the late 19th century and early 20th century, which just goes hand in hand, however, with bioregionalism, with place, and with Cascadia, and that's the existential and the phenomenological break with traditional metaphysics. It's an existential rather than essential, which anchored everything in a transcendental set of categories and logics and language and so on. And that really from Husserl and Heidegger on through Merleau-Ponty and...
Deleuze.
Well, yeah, there's a whole bunch of contemporary ones. I'm just doing kind of some of the pioneers and Levinas and so on. It's hard to read and it's abstruse, but once you realize their project, which was the unlearning or undoing of that secret code of a whole series of transcendentalities and idealities. So now coming forward, so I've read very deeply in contemporary philosophy as an unlearn, as a way to help me unlearn that. And bioregionalism is another one.
Whitehead among those philosophers that you'd look to?
I've never really read Whitehead. People keep saying, oh, you're doing Whitehead and so on. And that's nice, and process and field theory and Hartshorn and so on. I actually haven't needed it because I've really only really read the existential and the phenomenological philosophers. The last one, which was... in that vein, which I read was Wechsler's thing on Robert Irwin, the seeing is forgetting the name of the thing one sees, the quote from Paul Valery. Mm-hmm. And that is a fabulous story of an artist who really is a practicing phenomenologist in the best way, who recovers perception as a living presence.
Tell me the title again.
Seeing is forgetting the name of the thing one sees. It's 5th edition, if you can believe it. This guy has kept with Robert Irwin for 30 years and carried on that conversation. So it's an analogous. So I see a whole bunch of people making a similar move, but none really as rich and as grounded as the bioregional. And no bioregional vision or effort is as far along as Cascadia. And let me show you some maps to bring us up to speed on that. We're going to run out of light.